Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello everyone, Lawrence here, just putting this up top to give you a content warning for today's episode. We're going to be discussing Broadchurch Season 3, which does kind of go off into some sensitive topics, so just to let you know, we're going to be talking about sexual assault, rape, suicide. And if you're not comfortable with hearing any of that, then please, please, please feel free to skip this episode. You can join us next week for our Christmas special, which is probably going to be a lot lighter in tone and a bit more of an easy listen. So yeah, that's it from me. Thank you very much.
Hello and welcome to another Happy Pod, the only podcast in the whole entire world. This is a bloody little show where I'm here and I'm called Nathan and I'm joined with my co-host. His name is Lawrence Thomas Heisey. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, Nathan. How are you today? Are you going to interrupt me at any point? I normally don't get this far without you telling me to shut up.
I'm very well, thank you. Lawrence, why don't you tell us all what this silly little show is all about?
This is a real whirlwind today. Nathan, this is a show where we get together and we talk about pop culture every single week. It could be a movie, it could be a telly show, it could be a video game, but the main thing is that we do so without any of the toxic discourse that is oh so prevalent these days. I was going to ask you how you were, but you've already answered that.
Did you, like, were you going underwater at any point during that? What was with a deep fucking breath?
I was submerging. No, I realised I just roll it off, but normally I would have a little breath before, but I didn't this time. So halfway through that, I was like, I need to breathe, or I might pass away.
Okay.
I breathe. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
No, it's fine, I guess, but...
I need better breath control.
Yeah, I guess, but I still don't think you needed to just do a big dramatic breathe like that. I mean, you could have just breathed normally, but...
Yeah, but... No, but you know when you, like... You go, I'm going to get to the end of this bit.
I'll be honest, I really don't care. what is going on, Lawrence? It's the end of Crime Drama Christmas. We're coming to the conclusion, the last part of it, before we spin off into our festive special next week. What's it going to be? Ooh, who knows? I know. But it's...
So do I.
No, you don't. Shut up. I might change it. What's going on is what I'm saying, basically.
It is what you're saying. Nathan, we're talking about Broadchurch Season 3. We've done 1 and 2. You can listen to them now. Quick wrap-up on 1. We both loved 1. Quick wrap-up on 2. You liked 2. I preferred 2 less so, but still think it has cool parts.
You said you didn't like it.
I think I was being hyperbolic. I do like what it does.
You were being a cunt is what you were doing.
No, I'm just having an opinion, Nathan. God forbid. I didn't like it as much as I enjoyed the first one by a wide margin, but I still think it does some cool things.
And you see, now I'm scared because we kind of ended last week's episode with another bit of a punch-up and we was like, we had another bit of an argument, as we often do. We argue all the time. And because you were saying, you know, characters should never do anything ever apart from the one time they do stuff.
You like to paraphrase me a lot.
That's basically
to make your point a lot clearer.
That's basically what you said. You basically said they should only exist once. So who knows what's going to happen here today. I have no idea. I will say, when I first watched Broadchurch Series 3 when it aired in, I think it was 2017 off the top of my head. I might be wrong on that. It might have been earlier, but no, I think it was 2017. I loved it. Again, week to week, I was fucking gripped. I personally thought it was the best one of the three at the time. And then coming back and watching it over these past few days, can confirm, still have the same opinion. Still fucking gripped. Still believe it is the best of the three. And it's a deeply tragic story and fucking heartbreaking and awful and stomach-turning at times. But I think that's what makes it so engaging and really interesting and gripping. And I'm terrified to ask how you feel about it. Okay. But go on, tell me how much you hated it.
You will be pleased to know that it is a banger. It is a certified banger season of TV. I still prefer season one. I said it was good.
Sounds like you hated it.
No, it's an absolute banger. Season one for me, it's just like, it's so clean and focused and all about one thing.
Because you always prefer the first thing. Nothing can ever top that for you.
This is just not true. I made this point last week.
Yeah.
There's many seasons of TV that I prefer to the first season of that thing.
Okay, but I don't think that's true. But okay.
Okay, you don't think my opinion is true that I laid out clearly for you last week?
No, I think you're lying.
Okay. You know I'm not lying. I always bang on about Daredevil season 3.
I've never heard you talk. No, I have actually. But
yeah.
You also talk about Daredevil season 1. Daredevil season 3 is boring.
Look, we can argue about that or we can be happy about Broadchurch season 3. What would you rather do?
I'd rather talk about Daredevil season 2, the best season of the three.
Are you nuts?
No.
All right. I can't dispute it.
I am sound of mind.
That's fair. Like, look, I know you. It's true.
I don't know if I actually believe that. That was just to wind you up, to be honest.
I know, as many things you say are. But yeah, you're really good at getting me. You have a way about yourself that you can get under my skin.
Because you have strong opinions, and if anyone disagrees with them, you're like, no, my way is the right way.
No, but I know typically I can pick up when other people are baiting me with that. But you have a way of twisting the knife to make me go, I know you're winding me up, but it doesn't matter. It's still annoying. And I still have to bite on this. Broadchurch season 3, really enjoyed it. It is like, it starts so fucking strong.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, man, the pilot episode of this, not pilot, but like the first episode of this season is very much like a, it's just like straight away, it's like, we're back in the thick of it.
Yeah, like, there's no like, oh, David Tennant's come back to town, and it's like a slow build-up, a day-to-day, and then a thing happens, and now there's a reveal. It's just, bang, crime reported. Let's go through the very slow and very painful and very awful process of collecting evidence and getting the first statement and all this sort of stuff and dealing with fucking trauma and what happens next and all that kind of stuff. So it basically, a woman was raped. And that's the storyline of the season.
By the way, if you did miss the content warning up the top, this is going to be a pretty heavy-hitting episode talking about some not cool things, so be warned.
I don't know why they would have missed it.
No, it's, you know, some people just like, oh, I don't want to hear the theme song and just spam past it.
No.
I've done that a few times. No? You love every second of music?
No, you see, you have this thing where if a song lasts more than 2 seconds, then it's too long. Because for some reason, you think our theme song and everyone else's theme song is way too long. Even though it's like less than 10 seconds.
Look.
Because, again, I've said it many times, because you have ADHD.
Time is a resource, Nathan, all right? I've got things to
Not
do.
Not for everyone. Not for everyone, all right?
All right, fine. Yeah, look. Yeah, I think it, like, yeah, especially that first scene, it really does hold a microscope up to, like, just how kind of nasty, not meaningfully so, but, like, how nasty, like, this kind of process can be. Like, someone has gone through, like, a very, very traumatic incident, and the next thing they have to do is kind of stand under fluorescent lights and be swabbed and poked and prodded and, like... And, it, like, you see how apologetic they are. Like, Ellie is the entire time saying to... What's the woman's name? Trish?
Trish.
Trish, yeah. Ellie the whole time is saying to Trish, like, I'm so, so sorry that we have to keep doing this. And it's like, if you're going to try and, like, as a writer, if you're going to make an audience sympathize with the character, like, you need to have this be long, drawn out and painful, because you feel every ounce of sympathy you're ever going to feel for Trish in that point.
100%, yeah. It's dealt... I think it shows them... It does a good job to show, like, how much care is taken by both Ellie and, surprisingly, Alec, and, you know, the other staff working there. Like, they... At no point do they, like, make Trish feel like she's a burden or anything like that. Like, they're 100%, you know, just there to help her and apologise, and when they do have to go through something that's uncomfortable and all that kind of stuff. And it really is just absolutely heartbreaking. And I think the actress who plays Trisha, Julie Hemmingsley, most famous for playing Hayley Cropper in Coronation Street, amazing, really.
Mm. Oh, phenomenal. And she never plays it as, like, something terrible happened to me and, like, that's all I am. She's very, very much like a well-fleshed-out character. Like, she's, like, winding up her husband. She's, like, sleeping with other men. This isn't the only... Like, the rape was not the only thing that defined her character throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
Which is good. And, like, every scene that you see her in, it's not just, this happened to me and I am a victim for it. It's very much like, I want to move past this and I want other things and feel other things too.
Yeah.
Which is very, very nice. I like that this isn't, like, from a writing perspective, it's not another murder.
Yeah, it's something, like, different.
Yeah, and it kind of shows you how, like, horrific other things can be. To, like sometimes, you know, and this has been done in other shows as well, but, like, sometimes death isn't the worst case scenario. Sometimes it's, like...
Often isn't.
Yeah, it's a horrendous pain that you have to experience and live with and try and confront and get past, which is often harder. Death is often quick and easier to deal with because you're no longer there to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, the first season is all about a murder, but arguably that's not the worst thing about it, you know? Like, the murder was quick and fucking mostly, well, not painless, he was choked to death, but, like...
Yeah, it's a pretty crap way to go.
Yeah, not great, to be honest, but, like, you know, the worst thing about it was, like, the pain and trauma that came afterwards for the family and the town and everything like that, really. Here's something interesting and also just very depressing at the same time. So the actress who's played Trish, like I said, she's Hayley Cropper from Coronation Street, a very famous character. Like, everyone will know Hayley Cropper, apart from you, because you know nothing.
She's never seen Coronation Street.
Which is bizarre. Who hasn't seen Coronation Street? It's the longest running TV show in the world.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I watched it. Have you seen every TV show ever? No.
But did your mum never watch Coronation Street?
If she did, it was when I went to bed. Like, I just never saw it.
What time did you go to bed? It was on at, like, 6.
Oh, well then, I guess then, no, she didn't watch it. Or she watched it on, like, a rerun later on.
Outrageous. Anyway... yeah, she played Hayley, who was a transgender character.
Okay.
Introduced in 98. And there was no issue with that.
Exactly.
It was just a storyline and a character that was introduced, and she was in the show for almost 20 fucking years.
Jesus.
And doesn't that just show you how fucked everything has become?
Oh, really? God, how performative, like, recent times have
how
made
performative
people.
Everyone's recent outrage is because of a fucking...
There's no point getting mad at something that happened, like, for 20 years, 20 years ago, because people don't care about it now, so it doesn't offend me now, because I'd much rather talk about the stuff that other people are offended about now. God, I fucking hate that crowd of people.
It just shows you that this is all completely manufactured and always has
been.
But yeah, culture wars. Anyway, yeah, again, she is phenomenal in this, though. Really, really good. So we have, like, a kind of a whole, not a whole new cast. There are, you know, returning cast members, but we also do have new cast members showing up as well. We got Lenny Henry here.
Yeah.
We have other people.
That's true. There are more people than just Lenny Henry.
Yeah.
I've got a note that was like, it was in Broadchurch season one, you're led to believe that, like, this is everyone of note in the town, right? These are all the people, like, they all represent certain institutions. We know the journalist, we know the local priest, we know the local plumber that seemingly knows everyone. And this is very much like, it's still in Broadchurch, but these are the people that didn't exist, like, 2 years ago.
To be fair, these people mostly live outside of town, and they do say that.
True,
yeah. They do say they, like, live, like, on the outskirts, and, like, you know, like, the next town over, which isn't, like, big enough to have its own, like, fucking PlayStation or whatever, I don't know.
They have to drive past a few, like, long green stretches of grass. Yeah. Like, every time they go see someone, David Tennant's like, it's like a 20-minute drive.
Yeah, exactly. So your point is wrong.
No, all right, I was making a little silly no, point.
I know, but I'm going to say it's wrong. And I'd like you to say that for everyone now, please.
I like that they're on
the... No, I'd like you to say it.
Come on. My point was wrong.
Thank you.
I like that they're on, like, it being not a murder, they're on limited resources. It puts them on the back foot a little bit more.
Yeah.
How they're like, in season one, they had like the full force of everyone that worked at that police station. And this time they've got like just someone that is consistently portrayed as like a bit of a know-it-all at her job and not that good at it.
Yeah.
So like they're kind of very much like it's back to the basics. It's back to like Alec and Ellie just working this case in the most desperate way possible and trying not to make the same mistakes that they both probably kick themselves for every night that they made in season one.
100%. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, new cast, new people.
New cast, yeah.
Who's the standout for you?
Well, Trish, obviously. But then, like, there's just a whole bunch of terrible men. And, like,
yeah.
The tagline of this, it should be Broadchurch season 3, colon, gosh, men are terrible, aren't they?
Yeah. Even the best ones still suck.
They're all pretty bad. David Tennant's all right, but they're all pretty bad. Like I say, there's Lenny Henry, there's Mr. Mechanic, there's the creepiest taxi driver you've ever met, there's there's young fisherman boy, and then there's who else is there? Oh, there's the fucking absolute wet lettuce of fucking Trisha's ex-husband, the teacher.
Oh yeah,
I didn't like him at all. Just the biggest fucking, just such a nothing bloke. Just an absolute, just every turn he's just like fucking up and he's doing the wrong thing and he's like breaking into someone's house and he's like, yeah, well I live there. It's like there's no issue. It's like it's no issue. Are you fucking insane? You installed fucking webcam fucking creepy software on a laptop and you're like. Yeah, no, it's fine. Like, fuck off, you wet blanket.
Yeah, I actually made a list of all the objectification that happens in this season.
Okay, great.
In terms of the casual men.
Great.
And also just some of the institutions as well. The media's advertising is like, let's put the conclusion to a murder case on like page 5 alongside like the some promiscuous women adverts. Let's do that. There's the porn being shared by teenagers, which comes back in a big way. There's page 3 posters in garages. There's Lenny Henry stalking and being like, no, I'm allowed because I'm looking out for her.
Yeah.
No, you're not. And that's terrible. Stop.
What was that voice? That wasn't Lenny Henry's voice.
Oh, that was my just like, I'm a brutish man voice, wasn't it?
Okay, yeah. You do the same voice for everything.
Look, I got one. It works. Right.
I don't know if it works, but...
All right, go on then, do your Lenny Henry voice since you're so good.
It's more of a Birmingham accent, isn't it? He's from Dudley.
So well, let's hear it then.
We'll do more of a... No, Dudley. From Dudley. I work the show. I'm Ed Gynet.
That was your trigger phrase. Yeah, I'm from Dudley.
I'm from Dudley. I work the shop.
You come back to Ian full circle putting the webcam spy thing on his wife's computer. His ex-wife's computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like... It's obviously on purpose, but it's also quite interesting that even the characters that didn't do it, as it gets revealed later on, are still just like so blatant in their pushing of boundaries and disrespect for like women's kind of agency and like just they basically are like fine with it because they're like, oh yeah, I'm allowed to do this because I'm a man. No, that's not bad. I wasn't the one that did the bad thing. Therefore, everything else I do is fine.
What is it? Daniel Sloss, the comedian, he has like a bit where he talks about like how a friend of his, a female friend of his, was raped and or sexually assaulted, and it was done so by a male friend of his. And like he talks about like if he was honest with himself, did he recognize, you know, patterns in his behavior that would lead him to believe he could do something like this? And the answer was yes, but he didn't do anything about it because it's like, it's none of my business. You know, if he didn't see himself as part of the problem, then he's part of the solution. But that's not enough. You have to, you know, you have to actually put a stop to these things before they happen. And I think one of the worst things that, not one of the worst things, but a pretty fucking horrific thing that said is like when, I think it's quite early on when Lenny Henry is first talking to the police about Trish's rape, he tells them, like, he says, like, Trish isn't the kind of woman this happens to. It just made me feel so fucking horrible. Like, and then like Ellie or Alec like follows up like, what do you mean by that? You know, she, and it's just like, she's a nice woman. Like she, and it's just by, he isn't even aware of it, but he's basically saying that other women deserve to get raped, basically, which is, and that's the thing is, that's what's so horrific about it is he's not even aware of it. He doesn't understand why it's wrong. It's just ingrained in him and subconscious to be like, well, she's one of the good ones. She doesn't deserve to get raped. You know, that woman who wears a short skirt and gets drunk and is quite promiscuous. Yeah, she I can understand that, but not Trish, you know?
Yeah. It's also just this complete, like, and this comes again a bit later on with, what's the character, the wife whose party it was.
Kath,
yeah. Like,
you're Kath horrible with names.
I'm really bad with names, yeah. You are. I know their faces and I'm like, I know you.
Okay.
Kath like has a horrendous line, and I know she kind of apologizes for it, and I know it was heat at the moment and she'd been wronged and it was, you know, everything else. But she has a horrible thing of like, of all the women at that party to get raped, why you? And it speaks to what you're saying about this, like, this subconscious that you're like, because Trish, like, bless her, not a comment on the actress, but she's like, she was cast to be an every woman, right? She's not this like you say, she doesn't fit the stereotype of like young and short skirt and like,
she's not like conventionally attractive.
Exactly. And obviously, and also she's like, I don't know if she's quite middle aged, but like she's older than the average woman, the average woman that like a man might fantasize for and all of this stuff. So it's like, it's this like acknowledgement that like, oh yeah, it shouldn't happen to you, but like in saying that, you're implying that it like, but it would happen to someone else, and I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the whole series three of like, the reason I like it so much is it does deal with rape culture quite a lot, and it's something that's like, because you know, you got the whole storyline with fucking Ellie's son and like the porn and everything like that, and is two boys watching porn on a phone in an alleyway weird? I mean, it's weird, but like
it is weird for the fact that it is weird to do. Yeah,
would you watch porn in an alleyway just with your mate?
I'm sure we spoke about this last week about the, I don't know if you cut it out or not, but just the guy that I saw just casually.
No, I think I kept that in. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an incredibly weird thing to do.
Yeah.
And I also think that like, I've never been a part of like one of these, like I was a teenage boy once, but I've never been a part of like this, oh, send me that link.
Yeah.
Like, go on the internet.
Porn is a very solo activity.
It's not something I'd be like, oh, I'll get my boys involved. Bit of file sharing, I'll get the Google Drive up.
I don't want anyone to fucking... Look, all right, here's something. This is going to... You know, we often delve into strange topics on this show. Last week, we...
Especially had, in the last three episodes.
Last week, we probably had one of the... I don't know if it was the worst conversation ever, but it was strange. Anyway.
We've never tread so lightly before.
We're very brave, is what we're saying. Okay, I'm assuming, like me, you would have grown up with unrestricted internet access.
I did, yes.
Yes, okay. And as someone who is, you know, married and at some point will, I assume, you know, be discussing and eventually having children, that's the plan, would you allow your children to have, when they get to that age, obviously, have unrestricted internet access? Because, like, I'm not a parent. I never plan to be a parent. I don't want kids. I fucking hate them. I like yours, honestly, but I fucking hate them. Okay.
All the others, you'll kick in a bush.
Yeah. Even my own nieces and nephews, they can fuck off.
Get away, you're sticky.
Oh, my sister listens to this sometimes. That's not true. I love you all.
He's being hyperbolic for comedy.
Yes. But yes, so unrestricted internet access, would you allow your children to have unrestricted internet access? Because again, me, not a parent, I have no stake in the game, but there's no fucking way I would, because it's it's just the, and especially today, when, like, because me more than you, but like, we, I guess you would have had a, like, a smartphone in high school, did you?
I think the damage, it's a different conversation to when we were kids to versus, like, how my kids potentially would, like, my future kids that don't exist yet would, like, kind of have to dance around this, right? Because it's, culture is so different, and unfortunately, we've regressed in terms of, like, a societal divide amongst, like, sex and genders, right? So there is, like, men are far less, like, it's a weird one, because with big fucking horrendous kind of names on the platform constantly encouraging young people to degrade women and to see them as objects and nothing more, it's a very damaging thing to introduce someone that is, like, still having their brain chemistry developed. It's a terrible thing to introduce them to, and an idea that, like, needs to be approached with so much caution. Like, I would always, like, want to raise any kids of mine to, like, have, like, normal fucking ideals. Just be like, yeah, people are people. It doesn't matter who they are, what they are, how they identify, how I see them. All of that is irrelevant to the fact that they're dealing with a real human person. Mm. And, like, that would obviously need to come first. But it's such a fucking minefield, isn't it? To answer your question, no, there is absolutely no fucking way in hell that they would be just allowed to roam freely on the internet. Just, because the internet sucks now.
Just give them a smartphone and then be like, there you go, off your pop.
Crack on.
get let loose, off you go into that fucking wild west that is.
Yeah.
Is, because, like, it's so fucking easy for literally anyone to access Pornhub or anything like that. There is literally nothing stopping.
Most of the time it's, hold on, are you 18? Yeah, I promise. All right, cool.
Sick.
Come on in, join the party, bro.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, they really do. Like, and when I was, like, fucking 14, 16, you wouldn't catch me dead saying this shit. I'd be like, no. but no, it genuinely is, like, so fucking damaging. And I don't think people realize quite how bad porn culture and rape culture have multiplied because of it. And
it's an, like, ownership thing. It comes back to, I can access porn freely and when I want and whenever I want and however I want it. Therefore, women in real life should be subservient to that ideal.
And it's not just the fact that you can access it. It's also the kind of content that gets pushed as well. Mm. And it's like, because it's not real. It's like, if your only experience of, like, sexual relationships is through porn, like, that's, you're gonna grow up with such a fucking morphed perspective of what sex actually is, and you're gonna think it's supposed to be, you know, violent and rough and all this kind of stuff. When, like, it's you know, and sure, you can have that, but, like, it's not all it is, you know? It's like, it's so fucking exaggerated and stuff, and it's not real at all. And I think it's a tricky situation to navigate, but I just think growing up with only that and not, like, a real perspective can be so fucking damaging. And again, another reason why I'd never want to be a parent, but good luck, I guess.
Yeah, cheers. I think it also, like, there's an element of it where, like, it's about respecting yourself too, like poisoning your mind with these things right, can damage your own outlook on life, your own, like, kind of relationship with sex as you get older. Like, it's a completely, like, you're gonna see women in real life, wonder why they don't look like the ones on your screen. And then you're also gonna see yourself and wonder why you don't look like the men on your screen. Like, it's something that is, like...
Yeah, I've been there. Don't do that.
Yeah, like, but that's the thing. It's so damaging for your mind. And also it will seep into, like, aspects of your day-to-day regular life. These people that now are, like... The new Spider-Man game that came out, you're like, oh, MJ isn't the, like, supermodel attractive, and MJ doesn't have, like, enormous breasts and hasn't got, like, a look. Why does she not look like how I want her to look?
There's that voice, like, again.
Yeah, that's that voice. Yeah, but that's what they do, Nathan. That's what they're like.
Yeah.
But that's what, like, those people, the ones that are like, I use generative AI to make Mary Jane more attractive. I'm like... So what? What do you want to see that for?
Do you know, I saw, like, the shit I see all the time, it's like edits of, like, Rey and from Star Wars and Ellie from The Last of Us, but they have, like, makeup and long hair and like, oh, look how much hotter they look. I'm like, motherfucker, like, go to therapy, please.
Did you see that one person that made, like, I can't remember the character's name, but the character from Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, Aloy.
Yeah, that's right. They like zoomed in right up to, like, the close high def graphics on her face, and there was just a tiny coating of, like, hair on someone's face.
Yeah,
and they were like, "Why does she have a beard?" And I'm like, "Have you ever seen a real person? Like, fucking hell!
Leave your house, my guy.
It's not a beard, you fucking idiot."
Oh my god, Lawrence.
But anyway, to answer your question, yes, I'm always sharing porn with the boys in the alleyway.
Great. I think what we should do is we should go for a quick ad break. And then when we come back, we should discuss something else.
I think you're right, and this is definitely natural.
Lawrence, the Latimers are obviously back.
They are.
Now, obviously, you wanted them to die at the end of the...
I get your joke.
Yeah, you wanted them to die and not continue at the end of Series 2, but unfortunately, you didn't get your wish. So how do you feel?
My argument for season 2 is I wanted more of them.
So how do you feel about their, in your opinion, unfortunate conclusion, unfortunate addition in series 3?
Nathan, I think that their inclusion here works wonderfully. I think that
interesting.
We get a more interesting character out of Beth, because Beth is now in a place where she has to essentially use the grief that she feels to inform how she responds to someone else, whilst also kind of... What are you doing?
What's that smell? Is that a... Oh, is something cooking in the oven? Is that a... Is that a bit of humble pie?
Which I'm... No! What? No! Right.
Which I'm gonna serve up to you.
I encourage.
There is no, there is no possible conclusion for these characters. They should not be in the next season.
I deeply encourage listeners to go back and actually listen.
Right? I think
Nathan has a valid point right now.
I edited it.
Yeah, but you do with your skewed perspective and biased opinion.
I heard what you said twice. You said that. In your opinion, their storyline was wrapped up, so there was nowhere else for them to go, so they shouldn't be included.
If you could choose a soundbite, it'd be that, wouldn't it? Because that sums up your point and ignores everything else I was mentioning.
What else did you mention?
I can't. It was last week. I don't fucking remember
it now. Exactly. You can't remember. Exactly. You have no backup. I'll go back to the tape right now if you want to.
No, I don't want to.
Well, interesting.
The tape you'll choose will be the tape that proves your point. Listen.
I'll choose that. I'll play the whole fucking episode.
Yeah, right here, right now. Listen, right. Characters are, like, better woven into this story, I think. It's not an A and a B plot that are just kind of happening simultaneously. It's an A plot and a B plot that are more interconnected, mostly through Beth, who is back. Yeah, you get an interesting character through Beth, who is, like, now she is kind of having to respond to someone else's trauma with, like, what she's learned from how to deal with her trauma. She hasn't fallen into the Sandbrook mother kind of horrible, unescapable kind of mind prison. She's actually trying to use her grief to push her out back into the world to help other people through their pain. It's everything that's going on with Mark, like super interesting stuff, in just in terms of like grief isn't pretty and it doesn't go away and it's never wrapped up with a neat little bow.
See, I thought you'd hate that.
Really?
Yeah, genuinely. Like that was one of the things I was most worried about. When I was watching this season, I was like, oh, he's gonna hate this stuff. Because you were like, I made a joke of it, but you were like saying that like it was like a nice ending and everyone seemed to have moved on and storylines were wrapped up and stuff, and this kind of like does kind of backtrack on that a little bit, but in a way which for me works, but I would have thought that for you it would have been like,
I think, terms of the Mark stuff specifically, it's they have to live with it, right? They healed bonds in season two and they seemed at a more accepting place. Mm. But saying you've accepted it and having a bonfire to reclaim the beach rather than associate it forever with Danny's murder spot is not the same as living with that on a day-to-day basis. And we kind of do return to the Latimers in a place where we are seeing their day-to-day. And we learn
it's not
that,
going
like,
well. They've broken up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of like where I'm going with it, in the sense of like they like living through it day to day. It's one thing to have that moment, and I'm sure everyone felt great on that beach, and they went home and they had a takeaway with a couple of families together, and they felt good. But then you have to wake up in the morning and actively carry on that mindset, and that's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, I really really liked how that was explored. I think like there's. Let's talk about the Latimers rather than be vague about it. There is this like really interesting kind of point of Mark not being able to move past anything that happened. Like but it's also like it comes from he's addressing it from like a male perspective. We spoke about Mark in season one and how he is a pretty shitty husband and not so present of a bloke and just generally not really a well-intentioned but not great guy. And he kind of falls back into that in a way. Like he's gutted that like everything he says, it comes from a place of like, I'm gutted that as a father I didn't do my duty to protect Danny. I'm upset that another man took something from me and I can't ever win or get it back. And also it comes like from a very, I'm sure he doesn't mean to, and we kind of get that even outrightly said. But his relationship with Beth has suffered because Beth wants to move past this and he's still very much stuck in that place of, no, we lost and we need to win.
Yeah.
Fucking, what do you think of Mark? Super interesting character.
Very interesting, yeah. Like I said, I really liked his storyline and the way he just couldn't get over it. He just couldn't let go of what had happened to the point where it had an effect on his family. It had drove him and Beth apart and stuff. You know, he's living in his single man flat with his single man fridge.
His Jesse Pinkman mattress on the floor style, yeah.
I did have a laugh when he opened his fridge and it was just like bottles of beer and sauces, just a few different sauces. Like, that is a single man's fridge if there ever was one. Like, I've opened my fridge a few times and just been extremely depressed by the sight of it.
You look at it and you're like, oh, okay, well, this is all garnish. This is not drinking even garnish.
The job of these, it's shopping for one is a fucking nightmare because you can't buy anything fresh because it'll just go off within a fucking day or two. And it's, you're not going to use like a whole fucking, you know, bag of onions in like a fucking few days, are you?
Mate, move to frozen onions, frozen garlic.
I do now. I do. Yeah, that's what I do. I do really enjoy Mark's story, and it all kind of not culminates, but part of it is like his obsession with Joe, and he needs to fucking do something. What it is, he doesn't know, but he needs to track down Joe. He hasn't got the justice that he wants, and he needs that. He desperately needs that. So he goes to Liverpool. He tracks him down, and then he's like, "I'm gonna kill you," but no, I'm not.
I like that as well, because that scene in itself kind of...
Because you love Joe. He's your favourite character.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. it ultimately, it's anticlimactic. It doesn't give you anything as an audience. It lets you...
It's anticlimactic if you're a fuckhead and don't understand how storytelling works.
No, but like... What I'm saying is you expect, like, maybe anticlimactic is the wrong word, but, like, it No, season one, it spoke a lot about how, like, it plays with expectations and, like, it doesn't take the obvious choice. And in this, there would be people watching it that are like, what's Mark going to do? He has a chat and it's the most emotional and, like, vulnerable he's been with anyone since. And it's not lost on the audience that he can only let himself out like that to another man. And, like, at someone where he feels like his weakest and, like, the walls have broken down. He hasn't been this emotionally honest with the mother of the murdered child and his wife.
Yeah.
And I love that. Because you go to it, you know, he takes a box cutter and there's like, part of you in the back that, like, oh, Mark, don't make a bad decision. Don't. Like, you're so close to coming out through this.
I was just like, when he was going to the docks, like, where Joe works, I was just like, maybe, you know, maybe it's not the best idea to show up in a big blue fucking van with your name on the side of it. Maybybe think that one through for a minute. But he's not going for a stealth approach, really. He's very open about it.
Yeah,
he's just like, I'm here. Yeah. Do you know what I just realized isn't really in this? Nige. He's not really in this, is he?
I got my beefs with that.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Remember season one, I spoke about how I was most excited for that storyline to go anywhere?
Yeah.
I guess Nige is just out killing dogs somewhere peacefully, unbeknownst to anyone.
That's all he is. That's all he ever was doing.
I wanted him to go somewhere.
You build him up to some, like, Thanos-level character for some reason.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. You got your own issues, mate.
He sees a dog, he clenches his fist and goes, inevitable.
Exactly. I don't know what's your issue.
No, look. No, Mark's not going for a stealth approach at all. But it's... I don't know, man. I love it that, like, you come back from that almost unfulfilled. It gave Mark an answer, but the answer was just, it's done. Get over it.
Yeah.
And then
he kills himself, but he doesn't.
Yeah, but the intention is there.
Well, yeah, he tried. Well,
yeah. And Danny is there as a projection of what if my son was 7 years older than he was when we filmed season one.
I liked that, though, because he didn't shy away from it.
They
realised, well, we obviously can't have Danny be 11 because it has been several years since we filmed that first season and kids grow like fucking wildfire. So let's just be honest about it and let's just have Mark imagining what it'd be like if Danny was still here today. I liked that. I think that's a good way to handle it, really, instead of being like, oh, he's 11, this 6 foot tall man.
Who's got, like, you can see stubble on his face.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a nice way of, like, they always spoke up in season one about, like, taking the boat out and everything else. And, like, the fact that it's done on a boat, like, he's, like, the fact that Mark is, like, taking himself out on a boat to end his life in the exact same way that Danny's body was once transported on a boat and everything. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Oh, it's rough.
It is rough.
That, like, I'm telling you now, actually saying this, that you watched this episodically when it came out weekly, right?
Week to week, baby.
How was that for a week? That cliffhanger ending.
I thought he was dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
100% thought he was dead. Yeah.
It's tough. Tough to get through.
It was.
And they play around with that for, like, the first couple of minutes of the next episode, too. Beth's just in a hallway, like, upset. There seems to not be much... Like, it seems to be very vague and left open.
Yeah.
While we're just talking about the Latimers before we move on, I know we're jumping all over the gaff, but, like, I love that after that is the first time when Mark and... Because Mark stays over. He stays on the couch in his old house, which is now where he doesn't live.
Yeah.
With Beth and his two daughters. They finally have... a moment where they, like, for the first time in a long time, and it's ironic that it's happening while they're pretty much discussing their impending divorce, for the first time in a long time, you remember why these guys were ever husband and wife.
Yeah.
And they seem kind of at peace with each other, and I don't know. Yeah, it launches into so many cool things with, like, how Beth deals with Mark. Like, it's a larger conversation on suicide. I don't want to have two edgy conversations in one episode.
You can. We're not limited.
It addresses the, like, the age old thing of how many times have you spoken to someone about, like some sort of, like, maybe it was just a narrative in a TV show, or, like, you know, it could have been, like, horrific and someone that you, like, actually know in your personal life or whatever. But, like, how many times has someone expressed their view of like, I think doing that is selfish?
Oh, countless.
Yeah, it's like largely from like an older generation, it's largely their view on, it's something you do to inflict pain on someone else rather than something
an
you
absolute
do to
last
pain.
Result. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's and a lot of the time that's been kind of adopted into society as a large part of the reason why some people don't deal with it.
Yeah.
Cuz they think about their family and their loved ones and go, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
To them. Which, you know, I don't know. I don't know whether that's good or bad. The point I'm getting at is, like, Beth has to kind of grapple with that. She's fucking so pissed off with him. But then uses kind of her grief management training to be, like, she starts to speak to Mark in a very professional manner.
Yeah.
When, like, you see her kind of break down to Reverend Rory and say, like, I just want to fucking hit him. And there's a part of me that wishes he was gone. It'd be easier for me to deal with this. Like, nuanced and very interesting, that whole conversation.
Yeah. No, I think so too. And we haven't really spoken about it much, but I also really like just what Beth's doing just this whole season, really. Just the fact that, you know, she's taken her own fucking pain and trauma and basically channeled that into fucking helping other people, basically, and you know, being there for Trish and helping her get through everything. I think it is. Like, this is what I was getting at last week. Like, these when you know, there's when people say their storyline's wrapped up, there's nothing they can do. I'm like, but it's not. You don't know that. Like, there's other things that can be explored, and there's ways they can use their experiences and what happened to help other people and to move on and that kind of stuff. And I think it's really interesting that she chose to do that. And it can't be easy to take that step because, you know, that's a job where, fucking hell, I mean, she even says at one point, who supports the support workers? Because you're dealing with a lot of fucking trauma. Like, there's a lot to fucking deal with for someone.
And it's especially because that, like, that nature of profession as well is in real life, not just in this show, is so heavily kind of held up by people that want to help other people because they've been hurt themselves.
Like, yeah, it's 100%.
Yeah, it's very much like support workers are often people that have been pushed aside in the past and had horrible things inflicted onto them.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Do we want to? Should we get back on the case, the investigation, and everything else?
Yes, I think so. So obviously we have Alec has moved back to town with his daughter this time, Alec Jr. She's not called Alec Jr. But
no, I think she is.
Sorry. So yeah, he's back working. I don't know how that went, like, because he was gone for like 2 years, it seems like, but then he seems to was like Ellie in charge, and then like he came back and then was like, oh, I'm in charge again now.
There's another character, isn't there, that seems to be someone they both report to.
Oh, but there's always been that. There's always been like the fucking chief of justice or whatever they call it.
Yeah, I mean, literally, unless you're the fucking top chief, there's someone else, isn't there, to go to, I guess. But
I think they're kind of both running the show now, kind of.
I think it's also, like, it's kind of a loosey-goosey posting anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, Ellie is very much, like, she's the detective that can do no wrong in Alec's eyes, even though he'll often tell her she can.
Yeah, I tell you what I did love. The first episode, I absolutely love that when they go back to Trish's house and, like, Ellie's like, I shouldn't do this, but here's my mobile number. Like, fucking, here's my mobile number. Don't tell Alec about this, but give us a ring if you ever need anything.
Trish stitches a right up.
And then, like, 5 minutes after they leave, while they're still in the car together, and just the way Alec looks at her, like, whilst they're on the phone, that was pretty funny. I liked that.
I think like, he sees in her now, like, like, unfortunate as it may be, an equal that is, like, part jaded, but she's best friends. Yeah, they are best friends, but, like, she, like, in terms of how he views her as a professional and as a partner in this job,
yeah,
it's, she's become, she was always too optimistic and too trusting, and now she's taken the worst parts of him, but also the best parts of her, and she's found a healthy middle ground where she's like,
seems
no, you're too blunt,
yeah,
and I was maybe too nice,
yeah.
Now I'm regular.
She does have like a kind of good mix of both. She has this great way of being very friendly and polite, but saying the most threatening things to someone. Like, was it she says to that guy's girlfriend at one point, "Oh, we just need to sign this." It'll say like, "Oh, if you're lying to us, you'll just go to jail for the rest of your life," or something. Just while she's got the biggest smile on her face.
That's the thing. I noticed there was parts of that where like it's so tactical from her.
Yeah,
like
100%.
She now has like gotten sick of people trying to get one up on her, because she used to view this town with rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah,
and now she realizes from season one that everyone has dirty secrets and everyone has dirty laundry and everything else, and she's like, "I'm sick of fucking guys lying to me, dude."
100%. I love that she, right from the get-go, she fucking hates the young guy Leo, who, spoiler alert, ends up having to like have a very big part to do with the fucking rape.
And she's got that instinct. That's something that she didn't have in season one.
But like, there's a moment like towards the end where they are questioning him, and it seems to be like he's giving them like a full story, but it seems like genuine enough and everything, and he's quite regretful about stuff. But you just see her just like rolling her eyes at him, and just like she's like, "I'm not buying any of this shit, man."
Yeah. And she walks out and she's like, "I've had enough smarmy pricks in my life, time to know." Yeah, yeah. Like, Jesus. Oh, no, very, very good stuff. But, what do you think about where everything goes in the end? Because it's similar in season one. It's part and parcel two things, but the person who actually committed the rape,
yes,
that they're investigating, was someone I wouldn't have expected in a million fucking years.
I'll tell you what. First of all, horrific. Like, so fucking horrific and tragic and stomach-turning, like I said, when you find out what actually happens. But what I will say is that I had completely forgotten about Michael, which is the young guy who actually does it. So I had 100% forgotten about him.
They pulled a Joe Miller.
Even until, like, the very last episode. Like, I remembered the fucking young smarmy prick guy, and I was like, "Oh, it was him. I remember him doing it." So like, even though I had seen it before, when it got to the last episode, I was like, "Whoa, twist, shit, I forgot about that." So I got to experience the twist again, so that was fun.
Oh, amazing.
But yeah, tragic, really. How did you deal with it? Did you ever suspect fucking Leo? Obviously not Michael, because that comes out of nowhere, but like,
yeah.
Leo?
What
happened there?
So it's not,
by the way,
Leo
makes my stomach turn. Like,
I've got shit to say on him.
One of the worst people ever, but go on.
Yeah. But yeah, I tell you what, right after this, because now I'm just itching. In terms of Leo, if I was to say I expected him, it would be in the same vein that I expected everyone the show pointed a finger at, because all the men just suck.
Yeah.
Like, there's my main suspect, even, I thought it was too obvious. I didn't think it would be him, but I couldn't think of who else it could be.
Yeah.
Was the cat's husband. I've forgotten his name.
Jim,
yeah. Just because he's a dick. He's a total fucking prick that seems to, like, view sex as something that women owe to him and that he can take from them at any point.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my thingy. But it, again, with, like they did in season one, I only really suspected people when the show started suspecting them. And I was along for the ride. But no, for the most part, when it came to Leo, I was completely clueless.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it kind of like intentionally leaves Leo out of the spotlight until the end of it.
Yeah.
Really.
Which is smart, because it shows him. Also, it's like, I don't know how old he's supposed to be. I got the impression.
I think he said around 23, I think.
Yeah. So like early 20s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, which is, you know, not too far away from where we are now. A lot closer in age to us than like Joe Miller was.
Oh, yeah. Well, mate, you, mate.
No, Joe Miller's like mid-40s, I would say. Maybe not mid, maybe early 40s.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
We could do the maths, couldn't we? But
no.
No.
We're not that smart.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Look... I'm being polite to you, Nathan. He's a lot closer to us in age.
Okay.
But no, like, it's...
The actor is 47 now.
And in 2013, 10 years ago, 37.
Yeah, so it would have been 37. So That's closer to me than...
Well, I'm sorry I brought this up. Yeah. Sorry to do that to you.
But this isn't 2013, though. This is 2017. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So what, 4 years?
Just let's move on from
here. Yeah, anyway, let's move on.
I think it was like... They do rightfully kind of leave him out, but like when the reveal comes about and how it's someone that's like... that we can familiarize ourselves with, like we remember being like that age and like nothing meant as much and consequences didn't feel as consequential. Like it was, I don't know, like there was a lot less pressure of real world and real life responsibilities.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about Leo. Like yeah. You said he makes your skin crawl. So I know why, but tell me.
Cause he's like, when he was like in his interview, like the first one, and like even I, who knew he was the absolute fucking worst, he does seem genuine. Like he's very good at manipulating people and making them fucking see him as like an innocent victim. He's got this privilege about him that like he, to him, he can do no wrong and he can get away with it and he deserves all of this stuff. And he makes my fucking skin crawl. The way that, like, he's got this, like, 16-year-old friend. That's not a friend, really, is he? He's just...
a victim.
Yeah, he's got this 16-year-old lad that he's essentially fucking grooming. And, like, the way he just casually... offers his girlfriend to him to have sex with, and then
and the tragedy of her being there and willing.
Yeah, exactly. And she just goes along with it, and he even says like, she does what she's told or whatever, and it just makes you think, what is that fucking relationship like? Like clearly, horrendous. And the way he talks about like, you know, the way he raped the previous victims as well. Like he allows himself 1 a year as like kind of a treat and like.
I've earned it.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just the way he doesn't seem to show like any kind of remorse at all. He never once seems to regret his actions or anything like that. He doesn't even seem to understand that it's wrong. Like he knows it's illegal and he knows it's something he can go to jail for. But like when they're talking to him about it, he's like, it's just sex. Like, and it's
that line made me recoil into myself.
Yeah,
and Ellie screaming back at him like, no, it's fucking rape.
Yeah.
And like how loud her voice gets. I'm like, oh, again, Olivia Colman invented acting. But
she really like, did. She 100% did. Yeah.
There was two specific lines that made my skin crawl. One was that one that you just said, it's only sex, what's one more time?
Yeah. Like, fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah, and the second one that got me, and when I say, like, this one wasn't the one I thought which sent shivers down my spine, but I heard it and it just genuinely made me feel, like, white as a sheet and horrible.
Yeah.
Which was Ellie saying, you went there prepared, and he just calmly says, I go everywhere prepared.
Ugh, yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, there's people you can see in the street. There are people out there walking in the day-to-day life that do this and have this mindset. And it's, fuck, dude, like, it's, I don't know, man. It's his cold, kind of calculating nature, and it's made all the more terrifying by like his relationship with Michael and how that we were saying earlier, like porn can rot your brain and
genuinely can, yeah.
And like teenagers, if you aren't careful with how you express like certain things that you feel, you can fall so quickly. Can you fall down a horrendous path?
Mm.
Like teenagers now with like the fucking the equipment and like the tech that they have, I've never said an older sentence in my life, but like it's so easy to do terrible things now. Like
it is.
there are kids AI, out there that are like 14, 15 with Snapchat, and it's like I hate to think what God, that implies.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. What do you make of his whole like relationship with Michael? Because Michael, again, we can't forget Michael is the one that actually is guilty of the crime they investigate.
So this is the thing. This is another like really tricky, difficult situation because Michael is the one who actually committed the rape.
Yeah.
But, like...
and massive but.
Yeah, and like massive. And like no one is excusing that. But you do have to include the caveat of like He did not want to.
He was crying while doing so.
Yeah, he was forced into doing it. And look, Michael has made mistakes. Like, I am not denying that. Michael has made a lot of mistakes. But it's clear he didn't want to rape Trish. Like, no.
And also,
all.
Like, there's the argument of, like, you know, certain men would have, like more of a moral conviction and be brave enough to just defy it. Like, even if at the cost of their own life, would say, I'm not stooping there. Like, I refuse to inflict that on someone. But this is a terrified 16-year-old.
It's a boy. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's...
Jeez, man. Like, yeah. I've got a note that just says, like, someone exercising power and preying on the sexual frustration of young boys who are already porn-brained and desensitized to sex. Like, it's... That's what it is. Mm. It's just someone preying on the fact that someone doesn't know better and wants their desires met. And... You know, when it before he knows it, like he's looking at what's his name, the other guy, the terrible bloke,
Leo.
Yeah, Michael looks at Leo with this, like, oh, he's so cool. I wish I could be that guy. Until the point where he goes, oh, hang on a minute, this guy sucks. And until by that point, it's way too late.
Yeah, to like hits Trish with a cricket bat, and then he's like, fuck, I made a mistake here. I'm in too deep. Like,
and the casual nature of just doing that as well.
Yeah.
Like, fuck, dude. I don't know. This is like, oh, I don't know. This is, for me, it kind of, and maybe this is why I quite enjoy this season a lot, but it kind of brings Broadchurch full circle, which is basically like the outright and unapologetic grooming of a child from a guy with a power imbalance in difference in age and also who is exercising like an ulterior motive and agenda.
Yeah.
Which is basically this Leo is training a fucking rape partner. And back in season one, Joe Miller was essentially kind of trying to slowly convince Danny that things were okay to do this and this was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And this kind of like presenting all this was like one of the most chilling scenes of like a reveal, right? I didn't get this level of like going white as a sheet from Joe Miller or from Eve Miles or from Lee Ashworth, whoever played him. Like, this was the one that genuinely, like, scared me to my core.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucked.
Very, very fucked. It's tricky because... Does Michael deserve to go to jail?
I mean, there's the question.
It is. Yeah. That's the tricky thing, isn't it? Because
I think ultimately lessons need to be learned. And
he was charged with the rape.
He was.
He's 16, which I think he can be tried as an adult at 16.
I think it's 16, you're past the threshold, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. But I don't know. I just genuinely don't know.
It's such a nuanced conversation that
it is.
Think, like,
yeah. Because he did it.
He
did rape Trish Winterman. But he was also forced into doing it against his will.
Oh, what that does to Trish as well, like when she finds out it was a child.
Yeah.
And she just goes 16 and you just see her eyes, like her world shatters in that moment.
Awful.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, you're sat there like in her mind, you're like, I mean, obviously she couldn't help that. But it's just it's a horrific extra piece of information about that case.
Yeah.
That just how you would think and feel and everything else after that, you can't even imagine.
Yeah. It's grim. It depressed me a lot because, and we have this on to that long to watch this because we had to record the last episode quite late in the week. So we had less time to watch this one. So I was like shotgunning quite a few of these back to back and Broadchurch should not be binged.
It doesn't make you feel good.
No, it really doesn't. Like, I was like, fucking... Like, there's great cliffhangers at the end of the episodes, and they do end in a way that you're like, oh, wow, what happens next? But then you start the one, and you're like, oh, trauma. Yeah, I forgot.
This is what happened to me. I finished it a couple of days ago. So, like, there have been episodes where I've been, like, down to the wire, like, on finishing the episode and then coming upstairs to record straight after doing that. But, like... Yeah. I finished this a couple of days ago, and that was purely because one morning I was like, I'll watch an episode and then I'll do some work. And then like three consecutive amazing cliffhangers happened. And I was like, I guess I'm taking the morning off work. Like, I don't know. It's a great show. And like, God, I find like, I think it scares. What I want is to like, just somehow find a way to put a protective bubble around the character of Ellie to stop stuff like this getting to her from now on. Because it's the one thing that wasn't lost to me was the basically a child groomer and rapist being sat in front of Ellie, who knows that her son, Ellie's own son, is having trouble and falling into perhaps a wrong crowd when it comes to like the distribution and like possession of porn. And has like, she's taken his phone off him and he gets his phone back and she takes it back and then smashes it in with a fucking hammer. Like she doesn't have, I don't think, maybe a handle on how to handle this.
Yeah.
I don't know, just him sitting across from Ellie and she sat there like,
and she has to deal with her fucking dad being like,
oh my God. Yeah.
Being like, oh, who hasn't been raped? Like, shut up.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And then he is like, oh, people are always saying stuff these days. And I love the scene where she was like, and I don't want you taking your views from this old fucking guy.
Yeah.
No, but just like genuinely, I think something terrifying about this, and the show was so clever to include this, was a scene of Michael and Tom just like sharing that porn back and forth. This on a different day, it could have been Tom.
Yeah, it could have. 100%
that Leo
could
set
have.
His eyes on. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Really could have. Like, he first like started talking to Michael because he had a difficult father figure in his life, a father figure who openly fucking smacked him. And by the way, no one did shit about that. Like, he just smacks that kid in front of everyone. And there was, like, one of them was a fucking teacher who has a duty of care and an actual responsibility to report shit like that. But because he's the biggest wet fucking blanket in the world, he was just like, oh, I better not get involved.
Ian was one of those characters that I just wanted to hit.
So, me too. He really rubs me the wrong way.
Also, hang on. Before we, like, kind of, I guess, I don't know. Are we wrapping up? I don't know.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Well, what did you... Like, I don't know if I like this, and I don't know if I missed something into it, right? But Ian being like, I could come round for a takeaway later to Trish.
Yeah.
Hate that. Stay away from her.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just a poor writing choice, or they're saying like maybe there's like a comment on the larger... A man inflicting his way upon her, forcing himself back into her life, and how, unfortunately, this hasn't... given any men any lessons of perhaps I need to step back and be a bit more distant and like less presumptuous with where I should be and when. But like, I don't know, it just read to me like Trish was like, yeah, that sounds okay. And I was like, it shouldn't. That's not a good choice.
You see, Ian, like the camera software thing aside, he didn't really do anything wrong. And like, he's a massive fucking wet blanket. And Trish can do a lot better than him. But he didn't really do anything wrong.
It came from, I think, like an insecurity on his end rather than a predatory nature on his end. But still.
He's not a predator as much as he is... Might as well be one. No, he's not. But, like, he's just the biggest fuckhead going, really.
What bothered me about it... Because I see what you're saying, but, like, what bothered me is, like, whether his intentions were predatory or insecurity... masquerading in like action, it affected the woman in the same way.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter what his intention was, she was still being spied on like without her consent, which is something that I think Trish like perhaps should have been written to have more of a problem with. Her consent has already been violated in the largest possible way, and to have that prodded again, and then for the resolution to be like, maybe these two will end up back with each other, maybe their relationship will rekindle from this.
Yeah.
I didn't sit right with me, if that makes sense.
David Tennant went on a date.
He did.
Yeah.
It seemed to be going well.
It did. We didn't hear anything else about it ever, but he did go on that one date. And I think the funniest thing about that was like when he was coming home and he just bumped into Ellie.
And he was like, for fuck's
sake. Yeah.
Can't have a private moment ever.
Yeah. Very funny. I tell you what, genuinely, I think my favourite scene in all of Broadchurch is the one where he's taking his daughter to the station and then he sees the lads and he's like,
oh, yeah,
fuck this, man. I'm doing something about this. Yeah. And just the line, I will cut your tiny little cocks off. Oh, perfection.
No, just nothing has made me like perfect. Punch the sky more. Like knowing that, like, as a character, he struggled with managing family and a job.
Yeah.
And that little kid goes, oh, also, like, it's not fucking lost that, like, by the end of it, you realize that he was shouting at the fucking person he found guilty of the investigation.
Yeah.
Like, but he goes, you can't say that, you're the police. And he goes, I'm a father.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm like, fuck yeah, you are. And then he goes back and he's like, oh, can I see your ticket? And just rips it. And she's like, Dad. And he's like, no, you're going home, enough of this fucking shit. I'm sick of it.
It was what amazing scene. I love it.
He takes
so
Ellie's
much.
Advice.
He does. He does take Ellie's advice, yeah.
And I've never seen her look happier in her life. And when she comes in, he's like, I ripped a ticket up. And she's like, Olivia Colman has an infectious smile.
She really does. She's
like,
amazing.
When she's happy, you're just like, oh, I want to give you a little hug. You seem so joyous. maybe not little things, but let's wrap up some of the OGs.
Yeah, let's do a little run by through the town. So, Reverend Rory is having a bit of crisis of faith, a little bit.
He is
because like no one's coming to church and everything like this, and whatever. But then everyone comes to church.
Yeah, but then everyone comes to church and everything's okay.
Yeah, but they probably won't be there next week.
No, exactly. I do like...
You seem like a one-off, if you ask me.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. It seemed like a special occasion.
Yeah.
I liked the... Where is that scene from where, like, two people give each other a longing nod from across...
Walking Dead. Walking Dead. It's the scene. Yeah. We have joked about this so many times. Back when I actually watched this show, because it to this day, it's the most fucking bizarre and confusing scene in any show ever. I can't remember like what the fuck was going on, but they were is it Hilltop? I think it was called this. Like
it was Hilltop. That was the settlement that they were returning to. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a group of people. A group of the people were at Hilltop already, and then like another group came to Hilltop, and it was like, and they were all mates. They were all part of the same group or whatever. But they came up, and there was just like this. It was probably like a minute, 30 seconds, but it felt like just five minutes of people just like smiling and nodding and like they'll pat each other on the shoulder. It was like, we're all friends and this is good. But it was like, even people who are in the same group, like people who were already at Hilltop or were coming to Hilltop just hugged each other.
It did this crazy thing as well, where like if the character's relationship was like more complicated than a nod could express.
Yeah.
They kind of like did a nod and then doubled back with a different emotion before another nod. It was like a nod to say like, I see you, and it was another nod to be like, but we have a complicated relationship, and then a third nod to be like, but we've healed that with this third nod. And it was you're right, the only way I can describe it is, you know how Family Guy ripped the piss out of Return of the Jedi with the extended nodding sequence?
Yeah,
it was like that, but in a real TV show and genuine.
It was, yeah,
insane. Was.
Lawrence, name this Walking Dead character.
That's Daryl.
Oh yeah. Anyway,
that man got some of my favourite quotes.
No.
This is not a Walking Dead podcast, but that man is like a highly regarded character, and I'm like, he is just Norman Reedus.
Did he get his own show when he went to France or whatever?
Oh, fuck. That finale launched like 8 spin-off show. The Walking Dead will never end, and it is a plague in itself. Like
The Walking Dead is over. But it's not, though, is it?
The Walking Dead has spread further than the zombie apocalypse it's based on. Like, it's a disease.
Yeah.
God, that shit. Anyway, all that to say, Paul and Mark have a funny nod to each other where they're like, we're going to go our separate ways.
Play that Norman Reedus game where he's a delivery driver or whatever, where he works for Deliveroo.
Oh, Death Stranding?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never played that. Any good?
It's pretty good, but it's weird because like there's when you have like this kind of like home base scenario, and like when you take a shit, I guess, because you can, there's like the toilet door closes around you, and then there's just an ad for a Norman Reedus show. Like,
what the fuck?
Like, Norman Reedus is like, I ride bikes on AMC or whatever.
No way.
100%.
AMC's Ride with Norman Reedus.
Yes. It's so fucking weird. It's like, do you know he's in the game? Or like, what the fuck is this?
Is this an Easter egg? Because it's very intrusive. Yeah.
And he just drinks Monster Energy. Like, there's full-on cans of Monster. And Guillermo del Toro is in it as, like... Because, like, whenever a character pops up, it comes up with a credit, like, oh, Norman Reedus as this guy or whatever. And then there's some, like, scientist, and it's just director Guillermo del Toro as this guy. And it's like, what a bizarre game this is, man. What a strange and confusing game.
That sounds like it wants to hold me at arm's length, and I'm not sure I want to be immersed in something that's going to be like...
It's interesting. The actual gameplay is and the story is quite interesting. I never finished it, but it's...
And there it is. Nathan, the famous completionist to the point of obsession, didn't finish it.
350 hours currently into Valhalla.
Jesus fucking... And Valhalla as well. That's brave.
Yeah.
My God, what an undertaking.
I bought all the DLC.
Jesus, Nathan.
Yeah, I know.
You didn't have to complete that. It wouldn't have flagged up if you hadn't bought it.
No, but they add new trophies.
Anyway, look, I like that Paul is having a bit of a faith crisis, right? Because so many people all of a sudden made him feel like the most important person in the world and needed his advice.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they all dipped and he was like, but I like it when you guys like me.
Yeah.
Where you gone?
Yeah. I didn't necessarily like it when Beth was like, oh, I spoke to Trish about her speaking to you and she doesn't want to. And he was a bit like, ah, like, calm down.
I can't believe it. I'm like, yeah, she's the one. I'm the one that feels bad about this scenario.
Yeah. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah. I can't say that I would, like, if something horrendous happened to me, I wouldn't seek religion about it. Like,
not at all. No.
It's just not my thing.
No, yeah, like, it's not.
Love
not
and peace to the people that want that, but it's your right to say, no, I don't want that. Fuck off, Paul.
I have issues with religion, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, let's not do three controversial conversations.
No, let's not. The press and the media. First of all, Ollie's gone and got himself a job with a national paper. Yeah. So... Good for him, I guess.
He got himself another acting job, meaning he couldn't commit to Broadchurch season 3.
Yeah, he's now with the Daily Mail on Snapchat or whatever. So good for him, I guess.
What do you think about the wrap up of the journalist? I quite enjoy that. We've spoken about how like the show hasn't always necessarily handled media in the right way.
Yeah,
across these three seasons, but like, where are you at with how that's all done in this season?
I think this is probably the best handling of it because it's not a huge focus. It's pretty small in the grand scheme of things. But it's just basically the Broadchurch Echo is being absorbed by this like larger media company, which is basically like British BuzzFeed, I guess. And they're like, this isn't selling so well. So, you know, like you're going to come work here and we'll give you a hot desk and you can fucking... write articles about, you know, which cat looks the best or like which celebrities are
what
fucking...
Hogwarts house would you be in if you were this age or whatever.
All that bullshit and like fucking Maggie is just like, nah, fuck off.
I'd like, rather not do that.
She's still swinging that hammer of the fucking presser, the paragon and the only fucking person of truth and justice in this world and we have a duty and all that kind of stuff, which I admire her tenacity and that kind of stuff.
I do like that it gets a bit more nuanced because there are some things that like there is, she has a great line about like what you print is as important of a decision as what you choose not to print.
Yes.
And like it, there's a whole kind of situation of like they need to leave Mark Latimer's attempted suicide out of the papers because like the last thing he needs is another microscope under him because we've seen how Mark handles people looking at him and it doesn't go well. So I like that that is the kind of thing that she actually stands up against. It kind of also feels like the cap on the media's relationship to these small town events. Like, people are not just like words in print. They matter and they should be respected more than just blanket what Ollie was doing, just tweeting every single fucking thing that happened in the trial for mass consumption. People should be treated with more respect than, you know, they're not spectacle. They are real people and you're dealing with real lives. Even though people have a responsibility to like represent the truth, there are certain things that aren't crucial to telling that truth that should be left out for privacy's sake.
And then she's going to fucking become Mr. Beast or whatever.
I fucking laughed so hard. I can't lie. Right. It's not... Like, this thing... Does Chris Chibnall know what YouTube is?
100%, yeah.
Okay, then hear this sentence. I feel like I've summed up my opinion on it in one sentence quite okay. Well.
Okay, all right.
Journalist that hates clickbaity, pandering journalism that excludes bits of information to cater to the masses rather than represent truth thinks that YouTube will be the cure for that.
Okay, I see what you're saying, but yeah. I think it's more Maggie doesn't know what YouTube is.
Yeah, fair.
rather than Chris Chibnall, okay?
But then the show just sets her up to be like, I'm never going to have a career again. See you guys later.
Well, no, it's vague. We don't know.
Maybe she blows up.
I don't think she's... Maybe she will. I don't think she will. Personally.
With her incredibly specific niche channel direction, which is local news for this town, who are already uninterested in buying a newspaper about it.
You never know. Maybe that's exactly the kind of thing the algorithm will lock onto, and she'll go viral. But yeah, I think it's more just Maggie not necessarily understanding and
yeah,
and probably not really... Probably won't work out, but, you know, she can move on and do her stuff.
She's like, if a couple of teenagers can be multi-millionaires off YouTube, then I can, you know, scrap a few shillings together. And I'm like, no, but you have to get like a certain amount of views to be monetized. And like, it's a whole thing. Yeah. You've got to have a good video to do well first for you to even be on a list of people that can make money off of this.
But that's inside baseball, though. That's like...
Yeah, fucking, I know, yeah.
They're not going to sit down and break the fucking break down the monetization rules of YouTube, are they?
No, I guess not. But at the same time, I don't know, that I felt bad, but like I when she was like, don't laugh, and it is set up as a somewhat of a joke as well. He's like, she's like, don't laugh, and Paul's like, I won't, and he goes I'm gonna make a YouTube channel, and I was like, hilarious.
Yeah. Reverend Rory should make a YouTube channel.
Yeah,
that could genuinely do quite well, actually.
Yeah, because he'd have a eyes on priest? Him, small town pastor that dealt with all this trauma happening in his home turf, like
a hot priest. He could do like... He could be like a progressive hot priest, and like people would love that shit. Yeah.
Do you know where he would succeed the most? Get him on TikTok.
He'd do well on TikTok.
He would bang on TikTok.
They didn't have TikTok then, but
he can wait.
Okay.
Is it like in like what, like fucking 10 plus years after this season wraps up and he's like, my sermons are just not being well received. Like, I need to find a wider audience base.
Get him on TikTok. Yeah. He'd do quite well. Him doing the Renegade or whatever.
You would. Who else have we got to wrap up? We've kind of already wrapped up Mark. Wrap up Beth. How does Beth end?
Well, it's all fine, basically.
She'll struggle for the rest of her life, but she's on a better path.
Yes.
And Mark is driving off to be a better man somewhere else.
And Chloe is maybe still with Grey Worm. Maybe they broke up. Who knows?
Yeah, he's not been seen in a hot minute.
Yeah, we haven't seen him since season one, so who knows?
Yeah. How old would Chloe be? I guess Chloe would be like 17, 18?
18, yeah.
Yeah. oh, we didn't even... last thing to talk about as well. Another objectification is David Tennant's daughter. Not David Tennant's daughter. Alec Hardy's daughter.
Yeah.
Images distributed.
Yeah.
Just more
grim.
Terrible blokes. yeah, really.
Yeah, terrible blokes. Obviously, awful thing to happen, but it did bring about the greatest scene in TV history, which is David Tennant yelling at boys. So
I will cut your cocks off.
So, yeah. So, I don't know. Is there anything else to wrap up or say?
No, I'm having a look through my notes. Any little things while I look through?
Well, we did Little People of the Town is what we
That's
did.
That's true. We did Little People of the Town.
Yeah, Little People
That's
of the
catchier
Town.
That's a catchier segment title.
Little People of the Town of Broadchurch. I think that's pretty much everyone. Overall, Lawrence, Broadchurch as a whole, are you glad that I now forced you at gunpoint to watch it?
I am very glad. Yeah, no, it was always a part of like British TV culture that was like a gap in stuff I'd seen.
Gaps.
Yeah, well, absolutely one of many, but this was this was a massive gap considering how much I enjoy Olivia Colman and David Tennant as performers.
Yes.
So like the fact that
and how much you love Chris Chibnall's work, all of it, and you've heavily praised. So. Yeah.
I'm not even one of those weirdos. Don't tar me with that brush.
I know.
I'm not sad. I'm like I am completely indifferent to that infamous run of TV that he had. Anyway, Nathan, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it is the time of the show that we recommend some stuff.
What the fuck?
I know. Look, listen, calm down. I'll explain what this concept is.
Oh, all you right. Sprung that upon me. I'm going to need a minute.
No, shut up.
I'm going to need a minute.
We recommend something to each other and to our lovely listeners. It could be something that we've watched. It could be something we've read or listened to or experienced. Basically anything that we've done in the past week that we would love to share with each other and with the great people listening at home. Do you need a minute? Are you good? Have you got one?
No, I'm good, yeah.
Let's hear it.
Gamey, Gamey, Game, Lawrence.
Ooh, okay.
Is a show that I watch and I enjoy and I have done for a number of years. I will not elaborate.
No context as to what it I know, but tell the people.
No. Gamey, Gamey, Game is a show on YouTube, on the Stupid Old channel, on the Stupid Old Studios YouTube channel, which is basically like a sort of a comedy panel show where the main topic is video games, as the title suggests. the funny thing is, though, if you actually want to hear people talk about video games, it's probably not the show for you because it's mostly just very funny Australian comedians and Evan, who is not a comedian, bless him, but he just wants to talk about video games whilst everyone else bullies him. And
it's so stacked against him all the time.
So stacked against it. He's just trying to talk about video games while everyone just goes on about riffs about like cum or whatever. It's great. If you like, members of Auntie Donna have been on it quite a lot. Naomi Higgins, a great Australian comedian, Ben Russell, lots of names like that. We like do go on. A lot of those guys have been on it quite a bit. So if you like Australian comedians, Mr. Sunday's been on it, Nick Mason as well. If you like people like that in that kind of space, it's really good. It's always fucking hilarious. Currently airing on the episodes come out here Mondays, but I think it's Sunday night in Australia. It's good stuff.
It is good. It's home to one of possibly the funniest like visual podcast clip I've ever seen.
Was that Wind It Back?
That's Winding It Back. Yeah. With Evan. Yeah. Now, if you want anything that will tell you kind of what this show is about,
yeah,
go into this. Go watch YouTube that clip and go into it thinking this is a show about games, video games.
Yeah.
And it won't disappoint you.
Well, one of my favourite segments that they do is sometimes they do a segment called 7 Minutes in Evan, which is just a segment where no one gets to talk apart from Evan. And they just let him talk for 7 minutes about whatever he wants. So, and it's usually just like very nerdy tech shit, like servers or whatever VR he's been using lately.
But you just know that the minute they are allowed to talk, like it's going to be tough on him.
It's great. It's so hilarious. And it's, again, made by some really great people. Stupid Old Studios do so much fucking amazing work, apart some amazing comedy. Check them out. It's good stuff.
Indeed, indeed. Nathan, I also have a recommendation.
I don't care.
Oh, all right, well, in that case, thank you very much.
All right, see you later.
No!
Go on.
That was such a jump scare in my ears. So my recommendation this week is a TV show called Gino DeCampo's Secrets of the South. No, I give you a fair run, all right? Shut up.
Gino DeCampo has been cancelled, Lawrence.
Has he? Oh, no.
No, I'm kidding. No, he's fine.
Okay, good. Basically, my wife and I were like, we were watching another TV show that was coming up after this, so we put this.
Do you know
on,
he's
like,
not even Italian?
Is he Sicilian?
No, he's from Barnsley.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a character. Julian DeCampo's a character.
You're having me on. I know you must be having
me on. No, he's genuinely from Barnsley.
I'm Googling this right now, and I'm going to be... I fuck you! You're God damn you. See, this is what I was talking about at the start of the episode. You have a way of getting under me.
I know.
Working like a... Oh, fuck you. My wife and I were watching another show last week, but we flipped it on, and this was like in its last 5 minutes, weirdly enough, and then we went back and watched a few of them. Basically, he was just like in a little village in Italy cooking up. He goes, like, it's a show where he goes around to like various little villages and like finds out what their like their village dish is. What is their like, what is the pride of where they are? Like, what in this specific one, it was a lovely sea bass. No, right. Well, you know, a fish fan? Oh, I love fish. Anyway, we've been thinking about this sea bass. We saw this sea bass in like the last couple of shots of the episode, and we were like, fuck it. Today we went back and we watched the episode, and we made this sea bass for dinner, and it is genuinely lovely. Like, we've been in a spot recently where we're like, we're getting a little bit bored of the dinners that we've had. And I don't really watch cooking shows because I find it's a lot of filler and a lot of nonsense, and a lot of the times it's like, use this knife that you'll never own because it costs 100 quid, and use these ingredients that I got from an Italian lake somewhere fresh as the day they were killed. Like, it, so a lot of the time I ignore it, but we went out and we got a few little bits, and we made a very, very, very lovely fish and a very lovely salad, potato salad to go with it, and it was great, and I had a good time.
And I think if people are getting kind of like bored of the stuff they're cooking at home, then what they can do is check out HelloFresh.co.uk.
What is this?
I don't know. I just thought I'd do a fake out.
Nathan, they're pestering enough, right? I've been with them before, and then I've left them, and then they call me. They call me like, yeah, three
they
call times
me.
A day.
They do. They call me as well. They're like,
fuck off, HelloFresh.
Yeah. They'll just call you from like a mobile number as well.
Yeah, and they trick you, and I answered the phone, and this guy was like, what would make you come back to HelloFresh? And I was like, shut up. Go the fuck away. If you leave me the fuck alone, maybe I'll consider it.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, check out HelloFresh and use code another happy pod for, I don't know, 10 free boxes or whatever.
For some dinners.
For some dinners.
I guess.
Don't do that. We are in no way sponsored or affiliated with HelloFresh.
No, and we wouldn't be unless they offered us money, in which case we would be.
We do have an Amazon link. We haven't ever mentioned it, but we do have like...
Oh, we were gonna shill for this, but then it was like the week that the strikes were announced. And yeah, we
got like a fucking Audible thing, and we were gonna start shilling that, but then like the strikes happened, and we went, oh, it's maybe not shill for Amazon right now. Like,
let's shill for that on our other podcast that gets more listens.
True, we might start doing that
right at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Anyway, that sounds lovely. I'll never watch it.
That's completely fair.
I don't care about your sea bass. No one likes sea bass.
Let me show you a picture of it. I did the cool thing where I took a picture of my food like cool people do. Look, I'm showing you.
Great, that's lovely. That looks genuinely horrendous.
It looks amazing, and I also saw a meme that said Seabass is short for Sebastian.
I'm also like, I also have a general hatred of Seabass because whenever you catch a Seabass in Animal Crossing, it always says, it always comes up with the same little message, which is so fucking annoying after you see it like 100 times in a row when you're trying to catch a shark or whatever. And it's like, oh, I caught a sea bass. It's at least a C+. Fuck off! I wanted a shark. Anyway.
Look, well, I hope that hasn't happened to anyone else.
Oh, it almost certainly has. It's true. Anyway, that is the show, Lawrence. That is Crime Drama Christmas. Have you had a festive time?
I've had a very festive, miserable time most of the time with
this
show. Well,
next week we're going to have a very festive time because we're doing this.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Miles.
I'm Graham, Iris' brother.
Do you want some company?
Yeah, love some.
Wahoo! It's not Mario.
It is not Mario. And tell you what, thank you very, very much for listening. If you have enjoyed the show, then please feel free to leave us a review. 5 stars would be very much appreciated. You can do that on your podcast platform of choice. You can also give us a little follow on Twitter. We are at Another Happy Pod. That is where you'll get little post reminders for new episodes that go live every single Friday at 10 a.m. As well as it's a place where you can suggest little topics you'd like us to discuss. No promises on that. Maybe we'll get around to them. Maybe we won't. Nathan, we have another podcast. I would love you to tell me more about it.
I'd love that too, Lawrence. It's called Still Got Legs. It's our Doctor Who rewatch podcast, where every week we watch and discuss an episode of Doctor Who. It's a great fun time. Come along and join us. We're having a lot of fun.
We are indeed. Thank you very, very much for listening. We will see you all next week for a slightly less depressing discussion, I would hope.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.